Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Joy and welcome, everyone. I'm Naila Ansari, and I'm your guest host for What's Next. Today, we have a wonderful episode, an important episode, and I have some amazing guests, Elder Kelly Marie Wooford, Dr. Daniel Trippi, and Rabbi Alex Lazarus Klein. And today, we're really going to dive into some deep topics. We have Buffalo civic and religious leaders speak out against political violence. And this week has been something else. I know you all just had an amazing press conference and really looking at what is this idea of political violence? What does that look like now in a really divisive age, particularly with a major election that has happened this week? So I want to welcome you all, and I thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
So I'm going to start off and just ask, what motivated you and all the other leaders to come together and address political violence so directly?
So for me, it was the work that we did with Resetting the Table, the post, what do we do next? So we received the training and we worked through, you know, understanding people and communication. And, you know, there was this, well, what's next? And because of Buffalo's history on the world stage, locally, the political violence that has happened here within Buffalo, political violence seemed to be like the natural next step for us to begin to challenge others to begin to listen, right? So how do we do that? What do? We want a safe society. We want to be in loving communities and safe communities, but how do we get there? Getting there through violent means has not paid off. And then, you know, kind of for me, when you get to that point, you still have to talk. At some point, you have to talk. And how can we do that in a way that's helpful and beneficial and uplifting to the whole community?
Yeah, this project was really spurred on by May 14th and what happened, the terrible tragedy here in Buffalo. Resetting the Table had seen it. I mean, this is a national, global story, and thought this was a place that they wanted to work. And they got a grant to come here and started to do this project. All of us met through this project, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think, for me at least, this was the moment that I've been waiting for, afraid of, like so many Americans. What we've been told is that, you know, this, the direness of this moment, that we can't work across the aisle. And finding partnerships and friendships, I mean, these are people that I love, that I would, you know, do anything with, means that we can combat kind of the environment that we have around us.
It's so interesting because I was a part of Resetting the Table, one of the groups, and that's actually where I met Kelly. And we had a lot of these courageous conversations that were actually very difficult to have. And, you know, we were getting coached on, and every day I was like, oh, I think I got this. And then I didn't have it. And then I would have to go back and I'm like, can someone help me figure out how I'm trying to have this conversation with someone I totally don't agree with at all, actually, like, very much disagree with them. And I'm trying to figure out how to be courageous while also trying to be polite and effective. Mm-hmm. How have you all managed to come from totally different parts of the aisle, very different religious spaces, different ideologies? How have you all been able to have these courageous conversations and be effective?
For me, my faith teaches me that everybody is made in the image of God and they're worthy of dignity and value. And part of listening to other people is recognizing the dignity and the value they have. So we started to engage in these conversations. One of the things that was really freeing is that you know, understanding isn't the same as agreement. So learning to understand somebody doesn't necessarily mean that I agree, as you found in resenting. We have real disagreements in this room, but we do have something in common. We do see our common humanity, and to recognize that in listening to those disagreements is that's what our republic is built on. That's the foundation of our democratic system. So that, I think that's helped to bring us to the table, so to speak. And also what you find is when you start to dialogue, you go, yeah, you know, I may not agree, but I get why you believe that. And I see you. And you, that's really created for us, I think, deep bonds of friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think also what we've learned through this process is that people don't always know actually what they think. And when they start sharing their story, and especially when we're talking about different issues, suddenly when someone else reflects back to them and saying, this is what you're saying, this, I think this is what you're saying, suddenly they say, oh my God, I hadn't even realized that that's what, you know, it really helps to actually crystallize it for them. The key thing and the hard thing, done and led a number of these workshops, is, you know, you have people coming and they say, well, I want to change the other person's mm-hmm. side. Yeah, right. I have to tell them, no, we're not there. We're only there to listen. We want to be in community together. It's okay that we have disagreement.
Right. It's like, good luck with that, right? Yeah. It's so interesting because I know I brought up before we started today that I have university students that are extremely afraid to be going back to campus, particularly after all the results come out from the election. And, you know, they keep saying this is like the worst time in history. Like, we are so politically divided more mm-hmm. so than anything else. Now, granted, you can argue traditionally these are like 18 to 22, 23 year olds that may not really have any other experience outside of their current experience that they're having. Do you feel like we're in a more divisive time now that's really making people feel like there's really a fear to have that political violence will come and continue through the next few months?
I can only speak on my experience over the last 47 years, right? Mm-hmm. That's how old I am. And so probably 40, because the first 10, you know, I don't know.
Right.
And so for me, yes, it is the most divisive time. But I'm not going to say in all of history. I don't want to diminish our history, our past, everything we've worked through as a country, as groups of people, to say this is the worst we've been without acknowledging the strides that we've made. At the same time, we are faced with, you know, a very tough decision on how do we move forward as a country and what that means to us individually and as groups. And so I don't want to diminish, you know, their experience. Mm-hmm. This is the worst time of their lives. Mm-hmm. And that means something. And perhaps in these next days and months, as we, you know, go through this process, they'll be able to plant seeds for a better tomorrow. Our 40 years from now is totally different than a 20-year-old's 40 years from now. And so they have the opportunity to really engage and be at the forefront of what tomorrow looks like. We're in the midst of our heyday. But it's time and necessary for young people to be active and engaged and involved and to work through that fear to help us all have a better tomorrow.
Yeah. What I'd say is through this process, we see actually I don't think it's as bad as it's been, you know, portrayed or how the students, I mean, certainly I understand. I have a 16-year-old at home, you know, that's how they kind of feel too. But I also think that the tolerance for disagreement, mm-hmm. and that's what this process is about. You know, there isn't this feeling that we can actually have these conversations. It's too dangerous. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're really fighting against. And, you know, even before this process started, I have to be honest, you know, I'll look at Dan because he kind of started my processes. I probably would have been pretty afraid to talk to him, especially when it came to politics. Mm-hmm. And, my experience has, especially our relationship, but other relationships like the conservative evangelical sphere, has shown me, no, we have great partners on the other side.
You know, that's wonderful to hear because so often we never get to that point. Mm-hmm. You know, we just kind of, once we don't hear what we want to hear. It's kind of like we write that person off. And you've all been able to come up with a statement to get a lot of people together that actually do not agree with each other and usually tend to write each other off. Mm-hmm. You all got them to come together and sign, and we will have to get our listeners to see everything so we can sign as well. How did you all get that to happen? How did you overcome those differences in agreeing to a statement?
Yeah, wow. A lot of hard work, mm-hmm. a lot of time. So we first started doing the Resetting the Table trainings within our own communities. Mm-hmm. So I led a group of evangelical conservatives to have the dialogue in our own groups and found, well, we all don't agree, right? There's a lot of difference there. And then once we learned some of those skills, we were able to connect with other groups that were doing the same work. And we had a foundation that we knew coming together that we've had these skills, we can have brave conversations. And we also, I think, learned in our own spheres that, well, even within our own tribes, we don't all agree. So mm-hmm. obviously then when we come together, we're going to probably find some agreement when we do mm-hmm. that. So a lot of hard work, a lot of the training through the skills, and then I think courage to meet one another and spend some time talking.
Yeah, a lot of trust building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is scary. And I sometimes, because now I've been doing this for a little while, I forget how brave it is. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it just feels like, oh, these are my friends, you know?
Right.
Come on, this isn't so bad. We don't have red and blue zones in this city. You know, come on, we can talk. I think that it really did take thinking back on the process, it took a lot of trust building. I think even we met I met Dan a little bit earlier, but Kelly, in the training, we're trainers in this technique. And in those early sessions, I don't think, you know, like it was scary to think, because it was a very diverse group, politically diverse, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Whether we would be able to actually work together until we actually, you know, spent hours and hours and hours together, then the trust was built.
It's just so interesting you mentioned this idea of brave spaces, because we often say that a lot, and sometimes it kind of seems like it's on trend for a mm-hmm. lot of people, like, I'm going to create a brave space for you. That isn't always true when it comes to politics, particularly when people have very different viewpoints on how they're seeing the world and how they're engaging with the world. The disagreements, I'm sure, were kind of maybe possibly epic. I don't know. I wasn't in the room, but I could only imagine when it's like what do they say? Don't talk about religion and politics mm-hmm. at family dinners. And you all are talking really kind of about both of those things. What does it look like to actually have a practice in a brave space with people that are from different parts of the aisle, across the aisle from you all?
For me, from a receiving the training aspect, because that's been my most, I'd say, transformational space. I have cried. I have yelled. We have talked about racism. We have acknowledged gender issues. Like, we are not shying away from the tough topics. The three of us are sitting here having this conversation with you because they have seen me cry. I done cussed up every word you can cuss up. And because that's necessary. Like, it is necessary to say those things, whatever those things are, it's necessary to say it. And that's the only way to be able to see someone, is to be able to see the hard things that they believe or the hard things they've went through, but their perspective.
Yeah. So when we run the groups, first of all, the people come in, and I'm running one this week even, where we have people more on the liberal end and more on the conservative end. And when they sit down together, at first they're like eyeing each other, you know? And then what happens is we have some kind of trust building in a way where they just start opening up and talking about their story and, you know, people that are proud of them. And then over time, then we get to the actual issues, and we take, you know, we do it like a survey, and we find the issues that are kind of right where there's like a 50-50 split in the room, and we have them talk about it. And sometimes it's careful. I'm new. I wouldn't consider myself an expert in this technique at all, you know, but, you know, just it like, and like one time we had this group of all men that got together, and like, they just,
didn't get how to do it. They were trying, you know, and I realized we needed more helpers in there because it was just like, it wasn't working right. Because it is not easy. And, you know, like for myself, I consider myself a work in progress of this, to really listen. So what happens for me, this is my mistake. This is what happens to me. People will talk and I'll automatically make assumptions. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a natural thing. Mm-hmm. And I have to like get myself to breathe and not just jump in. Oh, this is your political position. So this is who you are. Mm-hmm. Boom, 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 boom. And it's almost always wrong. And as soon as you make those assumptions, then you're off on the wrong direction. You have to kind of listen under the words, really.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I would add to that, like we're complicated creatures. Mm-hmm. So, and when we do some of this work, and we've done the surveys where you have stand on this side of the room if you are on X of this issue, mm-hmm. stand on this side if you're on Y of this issue, and then you put different prompts out there, well, you'll start to see people move across the room. And I'm like, wait, I never thought I'd be standing next to you on this issue.
Right.
And like, wait, we think the same way on this. And all of a sudden you start to realize we really do have a lot of common interests. We have a lot of overlapping interests here. So, you know, there's this tendency to think that you're in these boxes and you never get outside those boxes. But human beings aren't like that. We're not creatures that are just, you know, monolithic in these things. Right. So, and this has really helped me to realize that, oh, like, well, Kelly and I stand on the same side of the room on a lot of issues. Mm-hmm. Like,
which is interesting because now in terms of media, it's either you're right or left.
Right.
Right. There's very few wiggle room for like that blur. Mm-hmm. Right. But we live in the blur as humans. Yeah. Like we aren't just like white or black, mm-hmm. in this idea of like who we are, what we want to be or who we want to be in our community. And it's interesting because you all have the call to action, which are the 3 points, which I actually find really difficult to do. But if we put it in action, I think it would work, which is stop and listen, pause before acting, and spread the message. So mm-hmm. can you all speak to that a little bit, and how can we do that?
So I would say the stop and listen piece, that step number one, Alex had spoken to it, like the ability to pause and stop and take a look at the conversation, right? What is actually happening when you talk to someone? At the same time, I think it's important to acknowledge we're not saying stop and pause and talk to someone in a space where you feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. There are certain, no harm should come to anyone having these conversations. You're having a difficult conversation in a gray space, in a space that's reasonably safe for you. Mm-hmm. So I am not asking an oppressed people to put themselves in a place of harm. That's not what we're saying. We're saying within the spaces where you feel safe to have these discussions and conversations, stop and listen. Have that open dialogue with your neighbor who you may already be on good terms with, right? And you're just learning to listen more. Or when, you know, we look at de-escalating conversations, instead of pouring gasoline onto the conversation, stop, listen to what's happening, and think about those next steps. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys want to pause.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, my training in academia and also in the faith space, you know, you're trained to lead. Mm-hmm. Right, to try to lead the conversation. And let me try to get you from, I'm listening to you, but I'm listening because I have a place where I want to get you, right? Mm-hmm. And what the stop and listen has really helped me is to go, wait, no, stop and listen, because that person's sitting with something that's really meaningful. There's something really important that they're communicating. Their political view is animated by that. So if I can start to listen to go, why is that so important to you? All of a sudden it de-escalates. And it builds a receptivity. It causes a resonance inside where it's like, well, we may not agree, but I understand why that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And now we can really have a dialogue, but it starts first with following the meaning that the person is putting out before you instead of trying to lead them where you want them to go. And I think so many of our conversations mm-hmm. today are like, hey, let me get you to my side. For now, there's a place for persuasion. And I think that's part of, but we can get to persuasion based on the fact that, oh, you know, we have receptivity now, and now you can understand why I hold the position I have. So stop and listen a practical way to do that is to just listen to what the person is saying and what they're sitting with and why it seems to be so important to them, and ask more questions into it before you jump in and try to take them where you want them to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, have a little curiosity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that so often we want to almost like win an argument,
yeah,
especially when it comes to politics. I call these battles over facts.
Yes.
And, you know, once I see I'm getting engaged or there's a battle over fact, I just step out because
right,
you can't win, you know, because mm-hmm, my fact versus your fact.
Right.
And it's really about kind of listening. I'll tell you about one conversation I had with one of the other trainers. And it had to do with voting rights. We were on the opposite end about checking driver's license. And it turned out, as we talked, we both believed in the authenticity of the, you know, electoral system. We both wanted to protect it. We just had kind of different mechanisms, mm-hmm, and different beliefs about what is important. But actually underneath it, we believed in the same thing, mm-hmm, even if it kind of played itself out differently.
Right. It's like listen for understanding as opposed to debate, right? Mm-hmm. That's like everyone's kind of ready to just go after one another and prove their point as opposed to really understanding why people are coming from their own viewpoint. The pause before acting, I think maybe the more difficult one for a lot of people because we tend to be very reactionary people. The moment we hear, mm-hmm, something, we just go like at 1,000 and we just want to put ourselves out there and, you know, sometimes that can create a lot of adverse reactions and people not always respond the way you want them to respond. So this idea of pausing, how in the moment, how do you all figure out how to actually pause? Because it's in theory, it sounds really nice right now, but it's when you get fired up and you feel that heat inside of your body and you like start to turn a little red. That's yeah. How do you get that pause before that happens?
Walk out the room.
Right?
I'll give you a really practical step. You know, when that happens, the blood rushes to the bigger parts of your body, right? There's, mm-hmm, a reason. That's why we do fight or flight, right? It goes into our thighs. So I like to put my hand on my thighs, mm, and just like get into myself a little bit and kind of slow my breathing down and go, okay, I'm triggered here. I recognize I'm hearing something that's uncomfortable for me. And my tendency is I want to run or I want to hit back, right? So let me touch my thighs, the bigger muscles, slow down my breathing and let the blood, because the blood flows to those muscles and it doesn't flow to my brain. Mm-hmm. So that's why I often will say things that I wish I hadn't said.
Right.
I didn't think we've all been there. But I think just a really practical technique is to get in your body, slow down your breathing, and pause. Mm-hmm. Even doing that makes you pause.
Yeah. And that reminds me, two things. One, this is a piece of communication. This is just a tool out of the whole box that, mm-hmm, we use, mm-hmm, to communicate. But understanding how the body works, so you're in that space, in that place, you can use other tools, like when you breathe, inhaling and exhaling, totally not resetting the table, but adding a tool to, mm-hmm, that. While you're in that place, in that space, control your breathing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, exhale longer than you inhale. Your body responds to that. If your inhale is to slow things down, you inhale, your exhale should be longer than your inhalation. Mm-hmm. So your breathing out should be longer than your breathing in. That changes how the body is working. And so part of that resetting the table piece is adding to the other tools you already have to communicate. And sometimes you do just have to leave the room. So that the tool is separate yourself from this conversation, right? That is okay too.
Mm-hmm.
It's still about being safe. It's about protecting yourself while engaging in difficult conversations.
Yeah, because sometimes the conversation isn't worth engaging
in, right?
Especially if the other person isn't, you know, going to match you where you are. It's like, you know, someone doing Taekwondo versus someone boxing, right? You're coming in from two totally different viewpoints, both fighting, but not the same, mm-hmm, in terms of like the tools. And the last one is spread the message, which I actually don't think that we do as often as we think we do. I think with social media, people think that we spread it because we might be posting it or we might be talking to a friend. But how do you all spread this message to folks in the community?
Well, we're trying to model it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that the best way to teach is just to do. And I think just the people that have signed that letter, the people that are part of this process, I think just seeing us out there, and that's why we're on a radio program like this or out in the community, because we want to give people permission to be able to have this and that it's okay to have this. And, you know, I think just that little window, because people are curious, mm-hmm. you know, I think they want to have these conversations. They've been hearing all this stuff on the news about the other side, whichever side you're in. And like part of them is like, well, I really just would like to have a conversation. Like, why does that group feel that way? Mm-hmm. And but they're too afraid to. And, you know, I would have been before this process. So I think it's just kind of modeling it. That's where the message is, you know, through our actions and words.
And there's it seems like there's almost a cultural exhaustion to some extent that people are like, you know, I'm enough. It's just enough. Can't we have a conversation again? Mm-hmm. Can't we humanize one another again? I do think so. The more that we put this work out in front of the community, there's a great receptivity within our own community here to go, yes, I don't want to go into the holiday season and have to have that fight again with Uncle Fred or Andrew. we want to do this. And so I think there's a lot of goodwill out there for this work.
I'm glad to hear you're having the same fight with your Uncle Fred.
Absolutely. My Uncle Fred too, right? I'm your guest host, Naila Ansari, with What's Next. And I'm with some awesome leaders today that are really making a difference in our community, Elder Kelly Marie Wooford, Dr. Daniel Trippi, and Rabbi Alex Lazarus Klein. As we kind of start to move forward and assess and work on these tools, because we will make sure our listeners get them so that we can really provide them to everyone, so that we can make sure that we are really preventing any political violence, particularly in our own neighborhoods. How can the average citizen contribute to a culture that rejects political violence?
To start the conversations. You know, I think that what we're trying to do is build a coalition. So God forbid something happens. I have personally that I have people to call, that we have people to call, that will be out in preventative mode. I mean, we've already had political violence attempts mm-hmm. this year. And, you know, they're extremely scary. And, you know, attempted assassinations. So I think it's, for me, you know, we can't control like the national global environment, mm-hmm. But at least I can have some measure of control here with the partnerships that we bring that can lessen it. And I'll talk about May 14th. Mm-hmm. On May 14th, I'm so proud of our community here. We had that terrible, heinous act that happened at the Tops on Jefferson. The next morning, people from all over the area were there. We didn't have any rioting. We didn't have anything like that. It's because of the relationships that are built here locally.
And I think it's interesting because with May 14th, it did force us to have these conversations and discourse that we mm-hmm. hadn't had mm-hmm. in a while. I think people got very comfortable and we tend to think that, oh, my neighbor isn't like this mm-hmm. or someone can't come into our neighborhood and do this because we're the city of good neighbors. And I think Buffalo has actually been really primed to have this kind of work here. And Resetting the Table came here. Can you all speak a little bit more about Resetting the Table for our listeners who may not know, and the ways that they've been helping us, and, you know, I've been part of it as well, bridge mm-hmm. these gaps in discourse?
Yeah, so Resetting the Table, I connected with them prior to 514. I'd had a connection that I had written some articles warning of political violence. This was about 2018. I started to get real concerned. I did my doctoral work in religious freedom and wrote a lot about the diverse ideas that animate our nation. And that caught the eyes of Melissa Weintraub, the president and founder of Resetting the Table. And we started to have conversations about this. And then 514 happened. And Melissa had reached out knowing that I lived in Buffalo and said, you know what? What could we do? We need to do something. And that started these conversations where we started doing some training right in our small faith communities. And then that bridged out from there. So what Resetting the Table has done is really help put a framework and practical tools around how we can dialogue, and then have really helped us, one, make the connections, you know, with each other, mm-hmm. but then also coming in and providing the tools and providing the space for us. To have an outside organization do that was just really helpful. I think somebody that was not from Western New York, some outside, you know, eyes looking in, teaching us those skills, and then bringing us together and helping coaching and facilitate those. And I'd even say casting vision for us, casting a vision for what it could look like for us. Again, not to agree, but to learn to dialogue with one another.
Yeah, everything that we've done this time, our press conference, the statement, has been the result of them bringing us together. They have staff, none locally, mm-hmm. but helping us out, assisting us. They've come here numerous times. They live around the country. But the organization itself, because I knew Melissa years ago before she started the organization, and she was very interested in the Israel-Palestine issue within the mm-hmm. Jewish community and how it was breaking apart synagogues. And so she got invested in that type of work. And in 2016, as the mood in our country was really changing, she decided that we need an organization that's really going to be working on navigating disagreement. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know the full extent of all the work. They have many, many projects across the country and different, you know, within business communities, municipalities, organizations. I would guess that we're one of the most ambitious projects yeah. to try to transform an entire city. So I'm very proud of that. But I actually can't speak to that. We only see a little piece of what they do.
Well, they're on it because I've gotten emails from Leah. They're checking in like, are yes. you good? Are you kidding? So they definitely are really making an impact. And I remember when I did the sessions with Kelly, I walked into the room and I was like, oh, they're really doing the work, because there were people here that I was like shocked mm-hmm. that they were able to really dive deep in and to make those connections. So I was really appreciative of the work that they were doing and the commitment that they were having with us here in Buffalo and really having these conversations that, you know, for the most part, I've always felt we were pretty siloed. But even within our own communities, we were also siloed, mm-hmm. which is what I learned. And so the work that they're doing is amazing. And I'm so happy that you all are continuing that here with us. As we move forward, we're trying to really denounce political violence. Mm-hmm. But how do we do that? And specifically, how do we do that when people get so riled up over a lot of things that they really may not, when we talk about understanding, really don't understand the person at a base level? So when we see all of these folks that are coming out and just in having a complete outrage, how do we, even within our own communities, denounce that, but also figure out how to manage that so it doesn't exacerbate to extreme levels?
In the words of Cecilia Monroe, know your role, know your goal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? And know where your voice is calming. Know when you are a voice that people listen to. Someone is listening to you when you speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need everyone. This isn't a Kelly thing. This isn't an Alex thing. This isn't, right? We need everyone within their sphere. And the sphere might be the living room. The sphere may be the synagogue. Your sphere may be the workroom at, you know, lunchroom at work. Like, whatever space you have voice, use that voice. Again, I'm not advocating for anyone to put themselves in harm's way. That's not what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's understanding and using your voice in the space where your voice is heard. I think people minimize and don't realize how impactful their voice is. There's always this talk about the next great leader. We need more leaders. We need more leaders. But that comes from the spaces in which we're talking about. We lead in whatever space we're in. And so to know and understand that we are the leaders, we are the change, not to be hokey, but mm-hmm. we literally are the ones that help control the flow of violence, not only denouncing, but the action in doing that, being a calming voice, force, a voice of reason, implementing the tools to de-escalate. Like, it takes all of us to do that small piece, in my opinion, and that is then what makes the larger difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to follow up, Kelly. You mentioned Cecil, and you mentioned Leah. Mm-hmm. Those are two of our trainers, mm-hmm. and we've worked most extensively. We love them, so the famous people that we quote, I like that.
Yes.
Yeah, I think, I'm not going to lie, it's scary out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just takes one person who, like what happened on May 14th, to mm-hmm. come and really ruin so many people's lives. You know, I have to believe that our society is stronger than that. Mm-hmm. And like, when you have these very rare incidences, that we come together and we don't allow it to degrade our society. You know, I know, just coming from the Jewish community, over the last 4 or 5 years, we've been in a state of trauma. We have security in all of our facilities. And there is a lot of fear of someone coming in. We're actually sometimes surprised that the rest of the world isn't like that, to be honest. It's, you know, we always, as human beings, we live in a world where we are vulnerable. We live and we die. And things are possible. You know, the worst is possible. But I also have to believe the best is as well. And I have to continue to believe that goodness is in us, and that human beings want to help each other much more than they want to hurt each other. And so I'm going to keep fighting personally, you know, with this message, because every time there's something that takes away our hope, all it takes is one action, opening a door for someone, helping out. Any kind of kindness reaffirms life. It reaffirms possibility. And I think that's all we can do. Each one of us, I think what Kelly said is that, you know, you have to feel that this isn't something that you don't have any control over. All of us need to feel invested in this. All of us need to have some kind of power. It's so easy to say, well, you know, those politicians up in Washington, D.C., they're making all the rules. No. You know, I mean, even when we're arguing over the president, is one person in a country of over 350 million people.
Right.
You know, they have influence, but why give them an outsized influence, you know, on our local societies? We have the possibility to make our own societies, you know, to build places we want to live that where people help each other and not try to hurt each other.
Yeah, I would say add 2 points. One thing that we can do to reduce political violence is not misrepresent each other. So I think there's just a lot of misrepresentation. We other the other. And let's represent each other truthfully. And then I think there's a really practical step. We want to be careful about free speech, right? Free speech has... It has, you know, a double edge on it. There's things I don't want to hear, but it's the right of the other to say those things. But it's not the right of the other to physically harm or to damage property, to physically harm, to do some of those things. So if I'm in a space and I hear of those things potentially, like it's as easy as going, we're not going to do that and report that. So I think there's a practical end here on political violence is to report or to, you know, turn in if you hear something is happening. And then being careful to go, no, let's represent people truthfully and not characterize one another.
And we have to separate like free speech from hate speech, right? Because this notion of like political violence can't happen really without hate speech first. And so sometimes when we talk about, you know, you all say it perfectly well here, this create a culture of concern for others. When we do that, that almost creates that block before hate speech can really happen, right? And so we want everyone to feel like they can voice their opinions, but we don't want it to go so extreme that it becomes a harm to other people politically. And so this work that you all are doing is so important because we are creating that block before we get extreme. Yeah,
let's not inflame.
Right, exactly.
You know, like we can be careful of the way we speak of different ideas.
And we can, you know, we can disagree, but we don't have to hate each other while we disagree with one another.
Absolutely.
And I think that's an important message that we all should be able to share and spread.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be right back. I thank you all so much for being here. We'll be back shortly with what's next.
Celebrate the 50th anniversary season of Austin City Limits. Don't miss remarkable performances from Gary Clark Jr., Black Pumas, Brittany Howard, and more. Watch every Monday at 10 p.m. on WNED PBS.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
Welcome back. I'm Naila Ansari, your guest host for What's Next. And I've been having an amazing conversation with some awesome leaders here, Elder Kelly Marie Wolford, Dr. Daniel Trippi, and Rabbi Alex Lazarus Klein. Thank you all so much for being here. Again, I've really been enjoying myself today and learning learning a lot. You all had the honor of doing a press conference, putting out this work and the statements that you all are doing to push against political violence. Can you all talk about the press conference that happened?
Well, it was great. We did it in front of the Theodore Roosevelt inaugural site, which we picked deliberately because that's the site of the political violence here in Western New York when President McKinley was shot at the turn of the century. And we wanted that as the kind of statement. This is what can happen. But we gathered, and it's a group of people. There was some, you know, community members that hadn't been as much part of the process, but a lot of us were heavily involved in resetting the table. And so it's kind of a gathering of friends. And so Dan kicked us off, and Kelly finished the statement. And I got to read a poem, and it was really wonderful. We had a bunch of news media there, too. So hopefully the word gets out.
Yeah, that's the goal, that we spread the word, and we just don't have one press conference, that this is something that we are going to continue to have and to work through and to be able to have access to in our community. So I know we talk about political violence, and we kind of just talk about it just for, like, election day. But this, the whole point of this is that it goes past election day. Can you speak a little bit more to the continuation of this work that you're doing?
Go ahead.
I mean, we're looking to do a project in the spring as well. I mean, this is ongoing work. And, you know, we don't even know what's happening over the next couple of weeks in terms of the mood of the country. We're kind of in it now. I mean, the election was sort of the beginning of, like, okay, let's see what happens. But in terms of our actual plans for this year, we are looking to do some sort of food drive that would be collected throughout the region, kind of like whole food, whole community, something like that. We decided we're going to just focus on this. Because, by the way, all of us, we've never organized, definitely not together, but I've never personally done anything like this before, you know, run a press release and done a, I mean, I've been part of press conferences, but never run them. And so we're kind of like figuring them, all this stuff out. And we, and the people that are helping us, you know, Cecile and Leah and the others from Reset the Table, they don't live here locally. So, you know, they can help us a lot, but we have to kind of figure it out. So that's what we're hoping, something that the entire community can get on board. And it's going to be about really helping the community.
And I think to speak to the beauty of the press conference, because it was beautiful. You had diversity of thought, diversity of voting, standing together, and then moving forward into a collective project like this. We're like, hey, we all do agree about this, that people should have food and access to food. And that's people perhaps in rural parts of our county, to our urban, to those who are veterans, to across the spectrum, right? For those that are in spaces that they're food deserts. So there's a place for the red and blue voter to actually come together and go, yeah, we can do this together. So I think there's just something beautiful in seeing people serve side by side, not only just making a public statement, but locking arms and working together, getting our hands dirty together. And I think that's the essence of what our republic is. Mm-hmm. You know, that was what the American experiment was, that a diversity of people could work together for the flourishing of a nation.
It's so interesting because, you know, you're trying to, as I'm sitting here, I'm trying to learn in my own mind, like, how can I do this in my own life? And thinking of instances every day at work or just in engage in the community of, like, how can I take these steps and push forward? One thing I think our listeners would want to know is, can you all share some personal stories on how you all managed to do that, on maybe some difference that you were all able to bridge a gap?
I can give a story of applying these principles, or are you meaning of us together as a,
so applying the principles?
Sure. So there have been times where in the community that I'm called to lead, there's a diversity of thought politically about how we engage neighbors. And so we want to serve our community, but then there's also things have gotten politicized, obviously, with a lot of the relocation of people to our community, right? So there's different sides of that issue, and yet there's still a common humanity. So in serving my new neighbors, There was some pushback on that. Mm-hmm. And my initial reaction was to, you know, well, no, I'm going to win this argument. Right? That's what I'm going to do, right? But when I stopped and I listened to what the concerns were from people who were resistant, I started to recognize, oh, so for you, it's about this. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, we hold the same view here. I was able to reduce some of the reactivity. And there was a receptivity that actually allowed us to have really fruitful engagement with our new neighbors and to mobilize our community to kind of, hey, we're going to come along people and love them regardless of how they got here, regardless of whether we agree of how they got here, we can still love people. And it turned into just a couple of very beautiful events with some of our new neighbors.
That's awesome. What about you, Rabbi Alex?
Well, I was thinking just in my own like family, my parents, they're on both sides of the political spectrum. So just, whoa. You know, and, you know, my mom will send me one thing and my dad will send me another thing. And, you know, just A, first of all, keeping what they're doing in perspective, but also I think by my doing this work, I think hopefully it'll help them to work out their own political issues. This work comes into our houses. It's not something foreign. This isn't something about, so many households are just broken up. There's a lot of couples, you know, not just my parents that have difference of political views. But we're also, I know through this work, we've really just started, you know, we officially became trainers just like 5-6 months ago. So we've been doing these projects out in the community. I know some of the places we've been exploring are like, you know, city council sessions, schools. You know, I've been doing work between neighboring church and our synagogue. So we're trying to get the word out. And believe me, if people are interested, we have these 20 trainers. People are very motivated. We'll set it up. There's no cost. It's really, we want to spread this as far and wide, and we want to learn. We're learning as we're doing this as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it goes back to, I've said this before, it's in communities and spaces where you feel safe. Mm-hmm. The three of us are at a place in our journey where even though we might have express some fear or concern and not really knowing what our conversations would be like, we still felt safe enough in that space to show up. And so that's really the point. We are here in this space. We have are at this part of our journey, but someone else may be looking at their block club or their, you know, women's night, you know, mm-hmm. church group, or it doesn't have to be this large diversity of thought, right? It can take place anywhere where you feel comfortable to be able to do that work.
Yeah, and it's not just about politics.
Right.
This is about any kind of division. So every community, you know, you get people together, they got differences of opinions. Mm-hmm.
I ask that because oftentimes we hear these different things and people talking. We don't tend to think of it as a personal thing that people actually have to deal with every day. So thank you all for sharing those tidbits with us as listeners. You all talk about encouraging others, and I'm one of these people that you might need to encourage on how to stay calm. So can you give us some skills or some tools that we can do to stay calm when we are engaging in these conversations, particularly when we are trying to have thoughtful discussions?
Come to more.
Yes.
I mean, you already participate a little bit. I think the more you do it, the more used to. I mean, personally, I come from a writing background, so I try not to take anything really personally. But, you know, like the things you hear and the issue that you care about, of course, it is personal. But you kind of need a certain remove once you're talking about ideas. But I think it's really just about practicing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. And knowing that this is just one piece. Mm-hmm. This is not the be-all, end-all for conversation. Because once you've learned how to listen and learned how to kind of express yourself in a way that is clearer, you then have to continue to have the conversation. This is just one of the things you can use when it starts to get murky, to be able to take a step. And I am a believer in the verbalized pause. Like sometimes you have to, like, you just got to say something, but you don't want it to be the thing that's going to mess up the whole conversation. Right. You know, you could say, okay, let me think about that. Give me a minute. Well, like, it is okay to add space and to give your brain time to think, you know, that lets the person know that you're at least engaged enough to have a verbalized pause, but that you do need space until you get to the point where you're comfortable to be able to say, you know what, I hear you. Here's what I hear you saying. Is that right? Now that we have that understanding, then you can dive into, you know, your piece of the conversation. But I think it's a stair step. And just keep testing, you know, more and more until you get to a place, if you desire to be in a place, where you're having conversations that may have more meaning or more on the line.
To add to that, you know, ask a good question. You know, you might be reactive in the moment and you're like, oh, I didn't like what I heard, but I'm going to ask and keep that person talking, you know, keep them engaged in the conversation. And if you're willing, you know, to, you know, put your hand on your thighs, take a deep breath, listen, and keep the conversation flowing. Oftentimes people are working these things out and the real thing is not the thing they lead with. You get a little deeper and it's like, oh, that's why this is important. That's what you're sitting with. And you can get that by, you know, continuing to ask good questions into it.
And be curious. I mean, I think that's comes with the curiosity. Like, why are you saying that? But it's okay. Going back to something Kelly said, is it's okay to say, this is really hard for me. You know, like acknowledging, you know, or I'm about to say something, you know, like walk. It's like getting into a pool. Like, you know, don't just jump in. Put your little foot there. Say, you know, like, I just have this little question. Can you help me? I wanted to know this. You know, it gives people a little bit, you know, makes the conversation go a little bit better.
For sure. Don't just jump into the pool. Take a test the water first.
Right.
So finally, I wanted to ask you all, you know, what lasting impact do you hope this commitment will have on the Buffalo community, and how do you, and how can Buffalo be inspired to help other communities grow as well?
I think we should be a model. You know, Buffalo is the perfect combination of proximity, people, and lots of diversity that allows for the things that we're trying to do. So I'm hoping we can be a model. And honestly, I have no idea what's going to happen next. I wish I did. Maybe I could, you know, go look a little bit in the future and take a look back. Hopefully we'll start. I'd love to have a more stable, like a, we don't have organizations really working directly on this issue. And I think we need boots on the ground, you know, actually doing this on a day, paid people that are doing this.
Have you all been seeing in your own communities the impact from you all doing this work directly?
Oh, most certainly. Yes, most certainly. I've seen the church community that I lead, people much more willing to sit down and engage with ideas, to talk to other people, to be careful not to misrepresent them, and a genuine excitement. When I told our congregation what I'd be engaging in, they applauded.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, they applauded. They were grateful for this. So what I imagine, man, can you imagine Western New York? We have the scars from political violence, everything from McKinley to Dr. Slepian's murder to 514 to bombings. What would it look like for Buffalo to be the city that rises up nationally, you know, and says, no, we can do better. What if we are the ones that can do that? And I just, that vision animates me, that this would go nationally, and that we would be the model that resetting the table and other bridging communities could look to and go, look what happened in Buffalo. If it can happen there, we can do this across our nation.
We are a very under-resourced region. Buffalo itself is a very poor city in comparison to, right? And so if a, you know, and you talk to someone who, you know, is into football, you know, go Bills, you know, those four Super Bowls, like that will always be a thing, right? And I bring that up because there are places and spaces within our society where we're still connected. I think we need to lean into those and not be afraid to call out the things that need to be said. We still need to call out racism. We still need to call out xenophobia. We still need and have those conversations. We have to have those conversations. When we do that, and we are beginning to do that, that to me is where the change occurs. It's not just being nice, right? We're not going to become, the city of good civil neighbors, right? It has to be an action. It has to be more than just talk. But talk is the way that leads to action. And so I think learning the tools of resetting the table, and in this case, focusing on political violence, gives us an opportunity to lay that foundation to be able to then move forward in action.
Yeah, I'm hoping this period we're in finally just kind of dies out.
Yeah.
You know, it's sometimes when there's fire, you know, this dangerous period, it can only last so long, I have to believe. Because people can't live in that agitation. Mm-hmm. So God willing, we're kind of at the tail end of it.
Yes.
You know, moving out.
Yes, and Buffalo will be the real model for the city of good neighbors across the country. I thank you all so much for being here. We have Elder Kelly Marie Wofford, Dr. Daniel Trippi, and Rabbi Alex Lazarus Klein. Thank you all so much for being here. I appreciate you coming on to What's Next. And I thank all of our listeners for tuning in. And we will make sure that everyone gets the information on the political violence work that you all are doing to make sure that we spread the word so that we can denounce and prevent political violence. Yes, thank you all again.
Thank you.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.